This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and you can watch our TV show on Free Speech TV and on our website. The New York Times on Monday published an article euphemistically entitled, "Trump and Staff Rethink Their Tactics After Early Stumbles." The piece is only one of many in the media that has attempted to analyze the early days of this bizarre presidency that has included the disastrous rollout of what is being widely referred to as a Muslim ban, as well as Trump's out-of-control Twitter habit and his blustering, divisive approach to foreign policy that has alienated him from ordinary people and officials, both at home and abroad. My guest is Larry Bensky. He teaches California government and public policy at California State University, East Bay, where he's been on the faculty for 25 years. He's also a longtime award-winning print and broadcast journalist, best known for his work on KPFA, where he won the George Polk Award for his coverage of the Iran-Contra hearings. Welcome to the program, Larry.
Great to be back with you, Sonali, and with our listeners on Pacifica.
Well, we last had you on right after the election. So much has happened since then. So much packed into just the early weeks of this presidency. And among the first things that Mr. Trump did was to propose a name for the Supreme Court to replace Antonin Scalia. In fact, he campaigned on this idea to the right wing that even if you don't like Mr. Trump, you should elect him because of the Supreme Court and keeping the right wing majority on the Supreme Court. How important is this particular act in the first 2 weeks of his presidency?
Well, I think it's one of the things, ironically, that he did right. Not that I would agree, far from it, with the nomination or the presence of this man on the Supreme Court, and not that it's not going to be controversial, but the way in which it was done and the person who was selected is far out of rhythm or with all of the other, as you say, disastrous and bizarre things that he did. This is a very establishmentarian character, a graduate of Columbia and Harvard Law School, a similar pedigree to Barack Obama, for example, and to many other Supreme Court justices. This is an Ivy League guy, a person from the upper middle class background, somebody that can be related to, not somebody with blood dripping from his fangs or ideology dripping visibly from his prose. However, if you look at him at all closely, you will see that this is the type of person who could lead the country further into the Scalia-Thomas Alito direction over the course of his presence, and he's only 49 years old. He could be on the Supreme Court for four decades. You know, it's interesting to me to watch how even the establishment media breathes a sigh of relief, and this is why I say the Trump administration got the process of this one right. They're so anxious to find something normal, something not eccentric, something not impulsive about anything that Trump does, that they take this guy who is arguably a very, very sinister figure in the way he thinks and the way he rules and what he writes about, and normalize him. The New York Times made it sound like he was born in a log cabin and was a rugged individualist from the wilds of Colorado. The guy was born into an upper middle class family. His mother was a hardline ideologue politician in the Reagan administration who got fired for defying a federal law that she had to disclose facts about the Environmental Protection Agency. She's a woman who ran around in fur coats at a time when people were protesting against cruelty to animals. She's a woman who was virulently against reproductive choice, which again was out of sync with her times and certainly with our times. And this was his mother. And he makes out of her situation a case for government persecution of individuals under the guise of regulation. Well, excuse me, when you disobey the law and when you don't conform to what you're supposed to do as a government official, you're not being persecuted. You're being accused of doing something that is not only unethical, but illegal. This was his mother. And from this, he got a defensive crouch through the rest of his legal life, in which he found anybody and anything that took the government as something that could be used for enforcement of public policy and of the common will as an evil. And he writes about it extensively. His whole idea is that if you go against the privilege of an executive, or the executive privilege as it's called, and that you try to enforce government actions for the public good, you are of necessity suspect. And if not suspect, you need to be overruled. To have this guy confirmed on the Supreme Court would be just as much of a disaster as a Samuel Alito, who he really resembles in ideology. Maybe he doesn't exactly resemble Antonin Scalia, but so what? It will give the Republican right-wing majority a firmer foothold for decades to come on the Supreme Court. And the fact that he's being normalized into being a regular guy from a regular background is ludicrous, is false, but it seems to have been successful in detoxing the Trump administration, at least for a few days, before it toxified itself again.
Right, and we should remind ourselves that the conservatives have had a majority on the court for decades, and it was the imminent loss of that majority that pushed them to act in such a shameful and unethical way to prevent Barack Obama from being able to nominate a Supreme Court justice, so really kind of taking that away from him, and they wouldn't have stood for anything like that under a Republican president. So the way they got to this point was also hugely unethical and controversial, and they're totally normalizing that.
Yes, and I think it's interesting in looking at Neil Gorsuch's opinions and his attitudes towards public policy issues. Going back, as I said, to the Reagan administration and Iran-Contra, he said that the campaign that he portrayed at the time as going on against the Reagan administration's policies in Central America was in fact hypocritical on the part of those who opposed the Reagan administration's heavy-handed influence there, by the fact that he said by intervening in Central America, the Reagan administration was trying to act for the public good. And here are these people protesting, and they're going to be responsible for the deaths of Contras. Now, Contras were a militant military force that was subsidized overtly and covertly by the United States as an heir to what the administrations had been doing for decades in Central America and elsewhere on the planet. These were not innocent so-called freedom fighters, unquote, as Ronald Reagan called them. These were bloodthirsty mercenaries in most cases. And to try to evoke sympathy for them and not for the people who they killed by the thousands and thousands in Nicaragua is typical of the twisted way that somebody like Gorsuch and the others in the Trump administration will use selected facts to try to interpret their own truths, present them to you, and then draw parallels and lessons from them. This is a very dangerous man.
Let's talk about the dangerous man who put him in that position, Trump himself. Now, Trump has... Trump has, in just 2 weeks, alienated Mexico, Australia, arguably all of Europe. And European countries are trolling Trump with these satirical ads. Even Canada is sort of, you know, in the crosshairs of Trump. And Iran, all of the work that Barack Obama did to ease tensions with Iran seems to be unraveling. How do you assess what his foreign policy ideals are? I mean, are we basically looking at somebody who's isolationist or hawkish? Because he kind of seems to veer between the two.
I don't think he really knows what he's doing at this point, and I think the people around him don't know what they're doing at this point. And the alarm cry that's going up around this on the part of various officials from previous administrations is very interesting to watch. No less figures than Henry Kissinger, for example, and John Woo, from very different eras, but defenders of not only unethical, but deadly policies around the planet, are being now cited in dissent from what Donald Trump and his administration are doing. Henry Kissinger came out the other day, almost fainted when I saw this mention of this, saying, you know, I don't think Donald Trump is really doing the right thing because he doesn't understand how to govern. Well, duh. Henry Kissinger didn't understand how to govern either, except he understood that if he kissed Richard Nixon's butt enough, he could get away with being a great big figure in history, he thought. He is a great big figure in history, but if history is properly told, he's a great big figure as a war criminal. So is John Yoo, the professor of law at the University of California, Berkeley. He has an op-ed piece in the today, we're talking on Monday's New York Times, in which he said, oh, wait a minute here, maybe Trump's going a little too far. He seems to be going outside the Constitution. He seems to not understand what a unitary executive is and what checks and balances are. Well, John Yoo is a guy who authorized by his stretched legal opinion, which he now kind of is trying to wiggle out from behind, that it was okay for George W. Bush to do anything he damn pleased in his administration, including use unethical, illegal torture in order to implement their policies. When you get guys like Henry Kissinger and John Yoo and dozens in between saying Donald Trump doesn't know what the heck he's doing and he better watch out, you've got alarm bells ringing all over the place. But Trump doesn't hear those alarm bells. He has a tiny coterie of people who are around him. The New York Times reports today, something like six people that he talks to and listens to, and that's it. And anybody else is viewed as suspect. Now, those six people include some people who are arguably not only eccentric, but completely certifiable, I would say. This guy Flynn and Bannon, his two major advisors, are ideologues. They're faith-based ideologues. They don't care about facts. All they care about is something that reinforces their ideologies. This whole Islamophobia base for what's going on is totally irrational, totally not fact-based, but seems to be a hearthstone from which Trump reasons, and that's why we got into this catastrophic order about immigrants. Now, where this will go, I have no idea. But the fact that the Republicans themselves are going to have to account for this, are going to have to excuse this, are going to have to explain this in things like confirmation hearings and in things like legislative hearings, these are things that are very, very troubling to those who believe in the American political system. Donald Trump is not one of those who believes in the American political system. He believes in the Donald Trump political system.
So if we have a situation, by the way, where Steve Bannon has inserted himself into this political position and, you know, he clearly knows nothing about foreign policy. If we have someone like Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, who has not spent a day working in government like our own president himself, we have a bunch of amateurs who think they know how government works, running the country and overseeing our dealings with other nations. And every time I think about this, Larry, I try to turn the tables in my head. Imagine if the Obamas had done this. Imagine if if any of this had played out under the Obama administration, how the Republicans would be howling in anger. But somehow under Trump, they are silent and relatively silent. Doesn't their acquiescence spell doom for the party as a whole?
We'll have to see. I have no idea how this will play out in the future. I teach political science, and there have been many, many instances over the course of United States, not to mention world government history, where people behave irresponsibly and eccentrically at the beginning of their regimes, and how it plays out becomes a question of how parties react, how parties split, what the pressure is, and we're seeing a lot of it already in this country from below on the political parties, which are not necessarily structured like the Democratic Party, to include much dissent in them and much effective dissent. So I wouldn't stop to predict right now what will happen. I do think that there are major historical parallels here, some of which, Somali, are beyond parity. This past week, weekend in Florida, Trump attended a charity ball, which is held every year. And that charity ball has as its theme various things that upper-class people dance around to and dress up as. Guess what they did at Mar-a-Lago, Trump's country club in Palm Beach? They gathered for the 60th annual Red Cross Ball, which this year carried the theme from Vienna to Versailles. in keeping with the Habsburg and Bourbon motif. The male staff members wore powdered wigs and knee breeches. The women were costumed in flouncy gowns and ash blonde behav wigs in the style of Marie Antoinette. Well, if you
I missed that one.
Set yourself up as beyond parody like that and not realize what happened to the Habsburg and Bourbon dynasties and what enormous miseries those dynasties were responsible for.
Let me guess, they served a lot of cake?
And how hard they fought to return their privileges by any means necessary, which included, of course, mass slaughter and torture, et cetera, and many, many wars, thinking that they would be immune to the consequences of it. Well, you have a perfect theme for a Donald Trump party. And what does he do? He goes on and has this party.
Wow. So there we have it. I mean, he seems to be a parody of himself. You know, the other day, as I was watching some of the Saturday Night Live parodies by Alec Baldwin, I thought to myself, you kind of don't need to exaggerate what Trump is saying. You could just actually say what he says with a straight face, and it would be a parody, sort of like how Tina Fey would read Sarah Palin's words without even changing them, because she herself is a parody of herself. So we have this president who's a parody of himself, and it remains to be seen how the next 4 years play out. Now, Larry, what about the fact that in the bluster and the bumbling way in which he has, rolled out his policies, he is motivating much more public outrage than someone like Mike Pence or Marco Rubio or Paul Ryan would generate by doing it more undercover. Is that a silver lining?
Well, I think there's a misperception in what you're saying here, and I see it and I hear it over and over again mm-hmm. on those who are being so justifiably critical of what Donald Trump's words and actions have been in the beginnings of his presidency. A lot of people see in this country Donald Trump not as a political figure, but as what he is, which is a show business figure. And when the curtain drops and the people run off the stage behindhand, who cares what they said or what they did? They were part of a play. You may have been moved by it. You may have been outraged by it. You may have been amused and entertained by it, but it's over. It's gone. Life continues on the other side of the curtain. We are now coming to grips with the fact that the guy on the other side of the curtain is a powerful person beyond the role that he plays on TV or on stage. And most people, I think, in this country do not share your perception, our perception of outrage and irony and sadness and fury or whatever we have about what Donald Trump is saying and doing. Most people think of him still as a showbiz figure, as the guy who is the host of a popular television series, as the guy who still comes on as somebody who plays Donald Trump as president. Sooner or later, probably sooner, the country and the people in the country are going to have to come to grips with the fact that this is not a guy playing a role. This guy has the role. This is his life now. And he is part of our lives now. And the things he says and does have real life implications for those of us who live in this country. I don't think most people are there yet. I think they think of politics because of the way politics has been practiced in this country as an elitist occupation, and they think of show business as something that's apart from politics that is also an elitist occupation. The politicians have managed to prove themselves irrelevant and ineffective in our lives in a large extent, and the entertainment figures have proved themselves to be highly successful in being able to play their roles, make a ton of money, and focus us away from the political and geopolitical facts of our lives. So until those two worlds coalesce much more than they have so far, I don't think we're going to see any effective is the word I'm looking for, change in the way Donald Trump and his administration behave.
Well, Larry, I'm sure we'll have many reasons to have you back regularly on our program over the next 4 years. Thank you so much for joining us.
4 years? Is it going to last that long?
We shall see. Thanks so much, Larry.
It's a great pleasure, Sonali.
Larry Bensky teaches California government and public policy at Cal State University East Bay, where he's been on the faculty for 25 years. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/RUwithSonali.